Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In our last segment here about Coy Richens, you just heard what the boys wrote. Her three kids, a nine-year-old who woke up to sirens and didn't know if he was safe, a kid who had to parent his own brothers because a woman in that house was either gone or drunk, and a boy locked in his bedroom so often his older brother smuggled him food while his animals starved to death around him. This was allegedly the world of Coy Richens, according to her own three children. We're about to hear Corey's reaction to all of that in its entirety. While those words were still hanging in that courtroom when Coy Richens opened her mouth. What you're about to hear is her full statement delivered minutes after her children's words hit the record. Not days, not after reflection, just minutes. Listen for what's missing. Because if everything, in everything you're about to hear, Coy Richens does not address a single thing the boys wrote. Not the locked doors, not the dead animals, not one word. What she does instead, you really need to hear for yourself. And that's exactly what we are about to do right now as we continue our fun series here. WTF was that, the sentencing of Coy Richens. Let's watch Corey do what she does best. Make everything about herself, shall we? Here we go.
My sweet baby boys. I know that today you don't want to speak to me, have a relationship with me, but you may think you hate me, and that's okay. I will never be angry at you for your feelings. When the day comes that you're ready, I will be here for you, waiting for you and loving you. But I need you boys to know and understand that I have been desperately trying to get in contact with you any way that I can for years. That all of my communication has been completely cut off from you since early 2024. And now I will use any opportunity I can to get a message to you. Even if that means sharing it publicly to the world, fully restrained, in my jail clothes, in one of the most horrible situations possible. I don't care. And I'm not embarrassed or ashamed by any of it. All I care about is you boys.
You're willing to narcissist.
I will do whatever it takes for you to hear the truth from me and to come home to you. For the time being, I don't know when that is or when my next opportunity will be. So for now, bear with me as I have tried to consolidate everything I've wanted to share with you for the last few years, with everything I want you to know until I'm able to speak to you again. And one long message. And although you may not be ready to hear it today, that's okay. My hope is one day you will be. May 6th of 2024, temporary custody was transferred from the state of Utah Child Services to your Aunt Katie and Uncle Clint. My last video call with you boys was several weeks prior to that, around April 24th, 2024. When you were still in state's custody. Once temporary custody was transferred to Katie and Clint against my wishes, They cut off all of my communication between you boys and I. It was years before I would ever have a trial. I warned social services that if they gave custody of you to the Regents family, it would be the last time I would be able to see or speak to you boys again. And your opinion of me in this case and wild allegations would soon mirror those of the Regents family. And that's exactly what happened. You need to know the dark side of the family fought a long, hard battle for custody, but was eventually ignored and denied. Since temporary custody was granted to Katie and Clint, they have not allowed me to see or speak to you. No more video calls, no more visits. They blocked the phone number for the jail, so I can't call you. Birthday cards, Christmas cards, the letters I would send you boys, they were all returned or rerouted.
And might I say bravo
all my
to them.
Contact was cut off more than 2 years ago.
Good parenting.
So please,
no, seriously.
Please ask them.
They are protecting
ask them for your
those
cards,
kids.
For your letters, if I tried calling you, please just ask them. Whether it's now or in 10 years. The one thing I need you boys to know I did not abandon you. I did not just walk out of your lives one day to never return, to never call, to never show up. Regardless of what anyone tells you, I would never, ever leave you boys. And I am so sorry if for even one second you thought that I did.
You made that choice when you killed Dad, bitch.
If for even one second you,
you don't get
that
to keep having
you.
That.
Because that couldn't be further from the truth. You boys are my world. The reason I continue to wake up every day and fight to come home.
Well, they don't want you, so maybe it's time to call it a day, Corey. Bed sheets, you know, just saying
I
Jeff did it.
I understand that you're in a difficult situation. Mentally, emotionally, and physically. I understand you guys have been through an extremely difficult time this past 4 years. You should never have to deal with such tragedy. And I am so, so sorry that you were going through this. You boys have the right to be angry and sad and confused, feel in survival mode, have questions. All of this is completely valid. Your feelings are completely valid. And one day when this is all over, we can sit down and talk about all of this.
It's going to be over.
Sort it all out. Ah! I promise you boys, one day it will be over.
Yeah, when your dad comes back from the dead?
I'm not perfect. I have succeeded, and I have failed. As a person, as a wife, as a parent, we all do.
And here's the consequences, bitch.
I have done plenty of things I am not proud of. Some I regret, some I don't. Some I'm ashamed of, and some I'm not. I regret things I have done right in my life to later find out they were for the wrong people. I have said things I shouldn't have.
That's a classic narcissistic flip, by the way.
Sometimes I have said what I should or not meant what I did say. There are things I can't change and long overdue apologies that I owe. There are would-haves and could-haves and should-haves. We all have them. We have all done them.
Oh, we all have.
Boys
have
will
we?
Too one day, but in your own way. And that's okay. That's life, and we're human. Nobody is all good or all bad.
Pulling everybody down to her level is what she's trying to do. Trying to normalize.
You're going to succeed and achieve amazing things in this life.
Oh, we are.
You're also going to make mistakes and fail at some things. But use those opportunities to grow and to learn. They do not define you. And don't ever let other people make you think that they do. We are not defined by our best or our worst moments. We fall somewhere in the middle, ever evolving. And you boys are ever evolving. Secrets diminish self-respect. They lose trust. They make us lose ourselves. I fell in love with someone who wasn't your dad. Your dad fell in love with someone who wasn't me.
Oh, we're going to say that.
I did things behind your dad's back. He did things behind mine. Don't keep secrets. Always put your spouse first.
Is that what happened?
Your dad and I didn't always do this. But don't be like us in that aspect. We made mistakes that I know I regret. And I'm sure if he were here today, he would say that there are a few things he regrets as well.
Speaking for the man you
murdered.
Marriage
is hard.
That's nice.
Marriage takes work. Marriage takes love. Big love. Deep love.
You're not capable of.
And you may think about divorce, and you will have fights, but then you will make up, and you will forgive each other. Because when your love is enough, your love keeps you together. Your love is all you need to ignore the noise.
And swindling millions of dollars from your husband's accounts.
Sometimes your dad would want to throw in the towel on our marriage, or I would want to throw in the towel on our marriage. But we never did. We always found our way back to each other. I would pick up his towel.
Clearly
didn't. He would pick up mine. We'd hand them back to each other and start again. Because our love never failed.
Yes, it did.
We stopped keeping track of each other's wrongdoings. And we forgave. And we moved on. And we loved. And if I had to relive all of those hard days all over again, I would do it without question.
You loved? He feared for his life. He was telling everyone how fearful he was of you as you attempted to poison him time after time. You stupid, crazy... Yeah.
Your dad and I were a lot of things. A mess of sorts sometimes. But we were this crazy, beautiful mess that made us a family. Because our love was enough.
Beautiful mess, yes. What a beautiful mess.
Our hard days never outweighed our good days. Our weak moments never outweighed our most memorable happy days. We always laughed more than we cried. We failed at some things. But we never failed at loving you, boys. Our love was enough to make our house a home. Our love was enough to stay together, to raise you boys. Our love was enough to forgive each other when others said that we shouldn't. To do things for each other others may disagree with. Our love was enough to protect each other, even though it may cost us everything.
This
may confuse yourself. Sometimes it makes you do things you know you shouldn't. But knowing it's not wrong at the same time. Because your spouse is your person. Your love is enough. One day, you will meet someone. And fall in love. And understand. That just your love is enough. Enough to withstand everything else. The noise of the world. The obstacles, the trials of marriage, the heartache, bad choices, forgiveness. You will understand your love is enough, and your love never fails. Don't worry about what others think about your relationship. Don't worry if they would do things differently. You just love, and you love big, and you love deep, and you protect your love. Your dad and I didn't have it all together. Together, we really did have it all. Because we had you three. Don't let anyone choose the direction of your life by their opinions and their judgments. Being able to hold yourself together in the worst of situations doesn't make you emotionless. Separating personal and business life and emotions doesn't make you unreasonable. Resentment can get the best of others. Don't let it get the best of you. People will always have a lot to say about lives they've never lived. Live your life the way you choose to live it. Just be safe and be healthy and be happy. That's all that matters.
Is it?
Sometimes people will want you to believe that life is simply black and white.
I think it's interesting there, you know, Just be happy. Not about treat other people well or do good against others. It's as long as you're happy, right, Corey? That's all that matters, right? Just that you that you're happy. Doesn't matter what other people think. It's essentially what she's saying here is doesn't matter what anybody else thinks or says, as long as you're happy, all the shit you do to get for your happiness, you know, it doesn't matter.
The situations are black and white, but they're not. Life, situations, they are full of color. At the very least, shades of gray. Always question the color, even if you're only questioning the gray areas. Keep an open mind. Question situations and stay curious. You will have some people in your life tell you how their love for you is unconditional. But once your most private life has been revealed, you quickly find out just how conditional their love actually was.
Oh, here's how she's been wronged.
Choose the people you hold close to your heart wisely. And always be the friend that walks into somebody's life when everyone else chooses to walk out. Always remember, the only people you owe your loyalty to are those people who never made you question theirs. Every day you wake up, you get a second chance at life. To do whatever you want.
No, you don't!
Be whoever you want. To succeed in all your dreams. Take the day and run with it.
Keep telling yourself that.
It's a blessing. Don't take it for granted. Sometimes you will have hard days when all you want to do is count all the ways things are going wrong or have gone wrong in your life. In that moment, stop, take a minute, take a step back, take a breath, and switch your thinking to count all the ways that it has gone right, all the good that has come to you, boys, all the grace, the blessings, and the love. Remember that anyone can give up on something. That's the easy way out. True strength comes when everyone is expecting you to fall apart, but you hold it together, persevering through the hardest of times. Always persevere. Always prove them wrong. Because you boys don't give up, and you boys will never quit. There's always going to be someone out there ready to tear you down, misrepresent you, lie about you, tell half-truths, and judge you. They will judge you on decisions you do or don't make, what you did or didn't do, what you did or didn't say. They will take out of context and twist your words. They will judge you on your emotions or the way you grieve. You may show too much emotion, you may not show enough. They will tell you you're not grieving correctly, you're too angry, you're too sad, you're holding it together too well or not well enough. Or maybe you're too ambitious. They will judge you on...
None of this shit is about her kids. None of it. All of this is about Corey. All of this is about how she has been judged, how she has been seen, how people have reacted to her, the decisions that she's made in a way that is not congruent to how Corey sees herself. This isn't life advice for her kids. This is Corey airing, and this is the mask coming down and her just throwing it all up onto everyone in that courtroom, how she's been wronged, masking it as if she's giving some sort of life advice to her children. Anybody who sees it as anything else is a fucking idiot. I'm sorry. You don't have enough experience in life if you're reading this as like a genuine mother talking to her children, because none of this is about her fucking kids.
Their demeanor. If you cry, if you don't cry, if you don't do anything at all. And all of this will get misinterpreted into something that it's not, formed by the opinions of who's ever creating it. And then silence is also too often misinterpreted and misjudged. But when people behave that way...
Everybody misjudges you, Corey. Everyone, right?
...to do with them personally than
every person, ever.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
It's not your...
It doesn't make it true. Remember who you are and what you stand for. The truth. And ignore the noise. Ignore their noise. Ignore their egos, their entitlement, and their biased judgment. Those who abuse the power and the positions they hold will have a higher power to report to one day.
Oh,
and that higher power holds the final truth, their final truth. Don't ever let someone tell you how to show emotion, how you're supposed to react to any given situation. Don't care what others think about you, what others say about you. Just let them talk. Just be you. Be yourself. Be authentic. Be genuine. Because those who truly know you, who truly love you, is all you need. Forgive those who turn their back on you, but never forget. Don't hold hate in your heart toward others. It only brings you down more than it does them. Apologize when you're wrong.
This?
Even if that apology is long overdue. You can't change what you can't change, and you can't change the past. But you can take accountability when you mess up. Admit when you make a mistake, even when it's embarrassing or humiliating, even when it can ruin relationships, careers, or your integrity. Be honest with yourself and those you need to. But never apologize for something you didn't do. Never admit to something you didn't do. And never beg for mercy for something you didn't do. Don't take the easy way out. Always stand up for what's right, even if you find yourself standing alone or with a small group of people that love you. Believe in yourself and be brave. Never give up on your fight, no matter how long it takes, months, even years. Never give up on truth, justice, and the fight of corruption. When something is broken, fix it. When something doesn't make sense, question it. If money is paying for it, follow the money. Your brothers are your best friends. Your dad and I raised you boys that if you cared about nothing else in this world, you care about each other. Your brothers will always be there for you. They will always be your brothers. You love them. You protect them. You take care of each other. You support each other. You help each other. And you trust one another. You be loyal to one another. And you keep each other safe and healthy and happy. And you stay together no matter what. Have each other's backs. Be patient with one another. Don't keep track of wrongdoings. Let them go. Forgive. Move on. Show compassion. Empathy toward each other. Never go a day without telling one another you love each other, because you are never too old or too cool or too busy to love each other.
What a narcissist. I mean, God. If you've had
Don't ever settle for just good.
If you've ever had a narcissist or a borderline in your life and they get to this stage of the apology or the story or the explanation or the whatever the fuck they're trying to do, it looks like this. It's not quite real empathy. It's not like quite really connecting with emotions, because they're not capable of connecting with those sort of emotions. So they preform these types of emotions. Watch and learn.
Go for great. In school, in your career, in hunting, in fishing, in your relationships, in your goals. Exceed expectations. Be like your dad. Be generous. Be charitable. Stay humble. Give when you have too much. Give more than you take.
Do the opposite of everything I've done in my entire existence.
Others are in need. serve your community. Be like your dad. Never stop learning. Through education, through people, through travel, culture, through business and friends. From your success and achievements, from your mistakes and failures. Be like your dad.
Why is there this, like, orgy of attorneys around her?
Love the outdoors.
Look what's going on here.
Your peace, your therapy, your heart and soul. On the top of a mountain somewhere. Where it's quiet. Where it's calm. Where you will be able to feel the spirits of those that you love and miss the most.
Okay, on a mountain. We're on a mountain now.
Be feeling like the your spirits. Dad. Laugh. Laugh often. Laugh loud. Laugh when you want to cry. Laugh when you're mad. Have that laugh that everyone recognizes and no one will ever forget. Even when you're gone, be like your dad. Love your family through the good, the bad, the disagreements, the back and forth arguments. Choose forgiveness, choose love. Choose happiness. Be a loyal brother. Be a noble son. Be like your dad.
The one you killed.
Have the hobbies that bring you excitement and joy. That give you a break from life. But build your life full of people and family who you love and that love you. Build a family that makes you happy to come home to every day. With a career that makes you hold your head high. Be the friend everyone wants to be friends with. The dad that everyone wishes they had. Be like your dad.
Be anything but like your mom and you'll be okay. That's the lesson to be learned here. Don't do any, like if you think, it's kind of like mom would do, don't do
it. As your parents, your dad and I wanted to give you every opportunity or choice that we didn't have. We would do anything for you boys, or break our backs falling over obstacles and finding our way to be sure
but you
had the best of the best.
Destroyed all security for these kids.
Even if we didn't always do it well, or have the right answers, or the words, we would give you everything that we had.
No, you didn't. You stole from their dad. You put yourselves in a horrible situation.
But the one thing I can't give you boys are the answers that you want the most. Because I can't give you something that I don't have.
A soul.
An explanation that I just don't know. I've never lost a son. I've never lost one of my brothers. A nephew. Or a best friend. But I did grow up with a single mother, and I have lost my father. I do know what it's like to wonder, what if Dad could have watched me graduate college, walk me down the aisle,
somehow
making it about you again, bitch.
Be there for the birth of one of you boys. If only Dad were here. I do know what that's like.
Oh, do you? Did your mom kill him?
What a time of pain that that brings. The sadness and the anger. I would never wish that upon anyone. Especially you boys. My own sweet babies.
Let me be an empathetic figure, though I'm not at all.
It's a lifetime of what ifs and if onlys. An empty hole in your heart where your dad's supposed to be.
She needs more snot. She needs to murder all this shit up a little
He's
bit, don't you
to
think?
Fill. He's supposed to walk through life with you.
Not a sniffling. Not enough.
Family. I do know what that's like.
Do you?
So murder, an attempted murder. 4 years later. And it's still hard for me to say those words out loud. They get caught in my throat. They turn my stomach. And I try to avoid them as much as possible.
That's evident.
Because it makes me physically sick to think about.
Should.
But still to this day, I can't believe this is real.
That you're being held accountable for your actions.
That this is our life. That this is my life. Convicted of taking one of the people out of my life and filled it the most. My husband, father of my children. Still in shock and still in disbelief. Accused and now convicted of such a heinous crime. Potentially costing me to never see you boys again. Just lost both of their parents, and there's no textbook answer on how or what we're supposed to do, how I'm supposed to react or move forward. And I'm so sorry you boys are being pulled through the middle of this.
That's somewhat telling. There's no textbook, there's no answer how I'm supposed to perform moving forward. Because that's what life is to Corey. She needs the guidebook. She needs the instruction. She needs someone to tell her how to react. Because brains like this don't know. They don't have empathy. They can't. They don't just naturally do what they're supposed to do. What so many of us have. They need to mimic grief. They need to mimic. And this is such a bizarre, out there, rare situation. There isn't a guidebook to it. And she doesn't have one, and she's never going to have one, but she can't perform just the basics of it. It's an interesting thought.
This absolute chaos. Between two families fighting that both love you so very much. Trust and assets, our home. None of it matters. You boys are what matter. Your safety, your health, mentally, emotionally, all of that should be being prioritized. I will and have always prioritized your safety. I am your mother. That is my job. And for anyone to scare you otherwise is just cruel and heartless. I'm sorry the 8 people from a jury who have never met you or me or our family had the right to determine our future. And they did that in less than 3 hours.
Sorry I got caught.
In a perfect world, there might be justice. But in a perfect world, nothing ever goes wrong. Tragedies don't happen. Some think a verdict or the sentencing will be the answer that they seek or that they need, but it won't. It will only give them something else to think about for a while. It may help to disperse some of their hurt or their resentment, but it won't relieve it. This grief will outlive us all. The hundreds of lives that this has affected. The lifelong trauma you boys have suffered this last 4 years will outlive us all. You haven't had to just endure losing one parent, but losing two. And no child should ever have to go through that. Especially when one was an unforeseen tragedy, and the other based on injustice and a system we're supposed to trust.
Should have thought that when you ordered the Michael Jackson stuff.
Your dad's memory will always be the kind that's a physical hurt. The tightening in your chest when you think of him. Particularly on days like today, his birthday. Because he was so loved that no verdict or sentence will ever be able to release that kind of suffering. I'm broken. I'm broken without your dad. I'm broken without you boys.
You were broken the day you came out of a chute.
God did not put me in this world to take a life.
God fucked up by putting
God put me in this world to give life. Your lives. And I don't know who or what I'm supposed to be if it's not a mother. Your mother. And as much as you've been influenced into thinking that Dad was murdered and I took your dad from you, that is completely wrong and an absolute lie. And the thought of that is still as absurd today as it was 4 years ago. And just because someone may not be perfect, that's a far reach for them to be capable of murder. To kill someone. Our someone. Your dad was in physical pain. A lot of physical pain. And just because some people didn't know or didn't want to see certain things, doesn't mean they weren't happening or they weren't true. He would have never left us intentionally. And I would have never taken him from you. From us.
Except you did.
He was the glue that held us all together. That made us, us.
Yeah, he stood by you despite how despicable of a human being you were until you removed him because he was an inconvenience to you. And you
Everyone
were so arrogant.
Their father.
You thought you'd get away with it.
Was he supposed to teach you the things that I could never explain?
Empathy. Morality.
He's supposed to teach you and do things with you that only a dad can do.
Yeah, don't marry that.
And only he could give you those life lessons between a father and a son. I would have never taken that from you, boys. I know how much you need him. How much you loved him. How much you aspire to be just like him. And I would have never taken that from you. And I'm so sorry that I can't bring him back. For you.
Don't say for me. Oh, you did say for me.
For our family.
Could you at least just said just for them, but you had to make that about you too? Bringing him back for you? I mean, really? Seriously? You have the boy. Oh, we got some snot rocking. We're rocking the snot. Look at that. We're murdering this shit. All right, that was a good nod. Because all this happened on the day he get granted a new trial. That's amazing.
I can beat myself up all day.
Please do.
About how I could have been a better person.
Here's a spike bat from Negan. Use that.
And I can understand and accept you boys being upset about those things. But murder? No. Absolutely not.
Mm.
I will not accept that.
Here we go.
This and I will not be blamed for something I did not do.
Classic fucking narcissist shit right here.
I will appeal and fight these charges no matter how long it takes. Not because I have anything to prove to this court, to the state, to the Richens family, or to the world.
You do.
But I do have something to prove to you three. I do care what you boys think, and I need you boys to know the truth. And because of that, I will never quit or give up on this fight for justice, the truth, and coming home to you. So please, I know that right now you may not believe me, that you believe I took Dad from you, and that's okay. I still and will always love you, and I'm asking that you please just don't give up on me. I'm coming home.
We've crossed that bridge already.
Not this year. But we're going to make this right. Our justice system will get this right, although this courtroom can't seem to. We have a long road ahead, but I will never quit fighting my way home to you boys. I love you more than these words could ever express. I loved you before I ever met you. And I will love you long after I'm not here to say it. And every minute of every day, I miss you boys more and more. And I think about how much I wish I could be with you. And this nightmare would go away. And we could have our family back. This entire situation isn't fair to anyone, but it's especially not fair to you three. And you boys are all that matters. I want to remind you just how strong you are. That you are loved by so many. And I am beyond proud of you. Of everything you have overcome. Everything you have achieved. And how much you bring into this world.
You say that as if your opinion should matter to those kids. As if you being proud of them matters in any way, shape, or form.
You boys have been through so much. And I wish I could take away all your sadness and all your pain. Tell you how much Dad and I love you, and that everything's going to be okay. I wish I could count the freckles in your little cheeks. Reading books before bed.
Wish I could get joy out of your existence.
And help you with all your homework.
Oh, wait, I didn't do that either.
Wish I could help you through the toughest nights. And hear your laugh through your happiest days.
Wish you did the things you should have done when you had the opportunity.
No, that's just not the way it is.
Well, you were too about yourself and pretending to be in HGTV star?
We have to be strong. We have to remember that our strength grows in these moments. But we don't think we can go on. But we keep going on anyway, because we have to push in these hard days. Because in the end, at the end of this war, it will be so worth it.
What's a war now?
But I need you boys to always keep pushing through these hard days. Because this will come to an end. I just need you to hang in there. Listen to your little hearts. Listen to your little bellies for the truth. Before you were told who to be and what to believe, remember who you are. remember who we are. Remember our family. I will continue to call you every day, even if my calls are blocked.
Well, this gets creepy.
Just so you know that I'm here. I've always been here. And I will always be here.
Like a narcissist does. Just so you know, I'm here.
My cards, my letters, they will never stop.
Make it about me.
I will never stop.
Even though they're like, leave
I
us
love
alone.
You forever. Mom.
Can't stop, won't stop.
That's all
right. All right. Well, that's great. So the kid said, leave us alone. We don't want you. We want you to be away forever. And your reaction is, I'm just going to keep sending you shit all the time, every day. Corey, I want to talk to you directly because I know you're probably watching this on your iPad in prison. Because you can't get enough of yourself. I know, even if it's bad, it's like, eat this shit up. Here's a little bite for you. Your son told that courtroom that you locked him in his room. You said nothing. Your son told that courtroom that his brother had to sneak him food. You said nothing. Your son described animals starving to death, freezing to death, eaten by raccoons because you wouldn't let them be safe inside. You said nothing. Your son said you smacked his dog in the head as hard as you could. Nothing about that. Your son said you made them watch videos of starving children because they wouldn't eat the shitty lasagna you made. Nothing. Not one word, not one syllable. Three boys describe a house of horrors with you at the center, and you don't acknowledge any of it. Instead, you talked about yourself. You talked about your love story, about picking up towels, about how marriage is hard. You talked about finding your way back to each other, even though you didn't. As if you didn't end that story by putting fentanyl in their dad's drink. You talked about your love being enough. Enough for what, Corey? It wasn't enough to feed your kids. It wasn't enough to unlock a bedroom door. It wasn't enough to put water out for the rabbit. You told those boys, boys who just begged a judge to keep them safe from you, to be like their dad. Over and over, be generous like your dad. Laugh like your dad. Love the outdoors like your dad. You turned the man the jury says you killed into a motivational poster and used his memory to prop in your own performance. You don't get to eulogize the man you were convicted of murdering and call it parenting. You told them he was in a lot of physical pain. You couldn't help yourself. Even after a conviction, standing in front of the judge, you were still planting seeds, still nudging the narrative towards maybe Eric did that to himself. Even in a moment that was supposed to be about your children, you were running the play. You told them, listen to your little bellies for the truth. You told children who described you as drunk, absent, and cruel to stop trusting the people who finally made them feel safe. You told boys who begged a judge to lock you away forever that you're coming home. That's not love, that's a threat, dressed up as a lullaby. Your son told the court that if you got out, he'd be terrified. You'd take him from the only people who make him feel safe, and your answer to that child's fear was, I'm coming back. What kind of mother hears her kids say they're scared of her and responds to the promise to show up anyway? You had one moment, Corey. Every camera was on you. Your children might watch that tape someday. You could have said, I hear you. I'm sorry about the locked doors. I'm sorry about the animals. I'm sorry you were scared. You didn't have to admit to the murder. You just had to admit you heard them. And you still couldn't do it. Just like every borderline narcissistic fuck out there. Because even after the verdict, even after the boys told the world what living with you was really like, the most important person in the courtroom was still you. Those boys asked for one thing, safety, a life where you can't reach them. And you stood up and told the world, you're coming to get them. That tells you everything. I think it tells those boys everything they already knew. And hopefully the rest of the world does now too. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The sentencing of Corey Richens. Oh, we're about to get into everything that happened in the courtroom on today's very special segment. It's called What the F Was That? The Sentencing of Corey Richens. That's right. She gets her own little intro right there because it was that. If you missed the 5-hour debacle, I'm going to sum it up for you, all of it, here in this piece. On the program here, we're going to be doing also in two other separate segments that will be dropping for subscribers pretty much right away. They'll be out there here later on today when I drop this, but we'll be dropping them publicly on Friday. We're going to go through two specific parts of the sentencing, the part where the kids are reading or having their representative, their social workers read their statements, and watching Corey's reactions, focusing on Corey's reactions throughout. And then Corey gave a 40-minute speech as well. I know it's Christmas in the true crime world when things like this happen, because it's just like, it's a train wreck you can't look away from. There was a lot of emotion here this day from a lot of people. And I'm not trying to make light of that by any means. People's lives have been destroyed by this woman. Her flippant reactions to all of this, her 40-minute narcissistic rant, all of it just show how there's no way truly to get through to someone with this type of a personality. Nothing lands. It just doesn't. I made an analogy, or I came up with an analogy, I should say, today. I was thawing a piece of ice. Why do you do that? You just thaw. I had a bottle of juice in my fridge. It was way in the back. You ever get that where it gets like it freezes solid? Been back there forever. I wanted to get rid of it. And so, but I didn't want to just throw a brick of ice in a juice box in the trash. So I wanted to thaw it. So I took hot water, onto the sink and then put it into the juice bottle to slowly try and melt the ice. I thought this is an interesting analogy because the ice to me almost really represents someone like a Corey. Like, was she always ice? Was she always this? When she came out of the factory, she was juice, if you will. Same with my thing of juice. But over time, she became so solidified and so dug into her way of thinking that she became this solid, rigid thing that is her, so incapable of accepting reality on reality's terms and dealing with the consequences of her actions, that no matter how hot the water, if you will, or the accusations or the confrontation against reality, she's still the damn ice cube. I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, pour a little hot water on there and it all melts. No, I mean, I sat there for, like, I thought this will take 2 seconds. Now, a good 5 minutes, I'm More ice, because the more ice you put on there, it just kind of cools around the edges. It gets a little smaller, but the only way you ever get rid of the ice is just by fully blasting it nonstop with hot water for a good period of time for it to fully melt. So when you're in a courtroom, and for a short period of time, the spigot is on, hot water is flowing at it. It's hitting it a little. It's not destroying it. It's not stopping. You're like, why isn't this melting faster? Because the damn thing is so solid. The damn thing is so rigid and deeply dug in and so solidified chemically beyond the control of anything a human being in that room can do. That's her brain. That there's no words that will ever fully land. Just like I can't just turn on the spigot and melt that thing of ice like that. No. Did it make it? Oh, it looks like it did something. Got a reaction out of it, but that's about all you can do. And it's just people like Corey, eventually they melt maybe, or they just stay solid in their freezer room because people give up trying to melt them. And that freezer room is a prison cell, and eventually they die. And that's the story of Corey Richens. That's the story of what's going to happen. But that's I think, the frustration point with so many people, and people like her, is why is this? They're like Teflon. Think of it like a cube of ice, big old chunk of ice. Like, yeah, spray some water on it. It's still going to be pretty solid, because that little sprig of water that's flying on it is nothing compared to the lifespan of it in that fridge or that freezer for months, 2 seconds of hot water ain't gonna change it. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Anyway, a 9-year-old boy's words were read into the record of a courtroom in Park City, Utah. He didn't write them for attention. He wrote them because a therapist helped him put on paper what he'd been carrying since the night he woke up to sirens in his own house. This is what he said. Once she is gone, I will feel happy. I will feel safer and relaxed and trust people more. Nine-year-old. His mother, the woman he's talking about, was sitting 15 feet away when those words were read aloud. She rolled her eyes. Got a lot of this. The cameras caught it. Multiple outlets reported the same thing. You've probably seen it. We're gonna do a whole video on this on the channel here. By the time you're watching this, it'll probably be up. If not, watch for it. It's coming very shortly. We're gonna watch her reactions and work our way through it. While all three of her son's statements are being read by their therapist, statements describing locked rooms, dead animals, hunger, fear, a household where their mother was allegedly drunk or absent, Corey Richens responded with visible contempt, eye rolls, scoffing, facial expressions, and according to every reporter in that room and the cameras themselves, conveyed something closer to irritation than grief. And then her brother stood up, called her innocent, talked about missing family game nights and finger gun dances and board games, and the tears came instantly. Not building, not breaking through, like a faucet. When her sister-in-law described her as a devoted mother, Corey dissolved. When a jail yoga instructor praised her attendance record, she wept. She's so good at showing up to yoga. Oh! When her kids are like, she's locking us in rooms and killing our pets. God. She killed our father. Oh, what? What? Oh, no, you did. That was Corey Richens. I want to sit with that for a second because that split contempt with her children speaking, tears when she's being praised, is not a woman overwhelmed by emotion. That is selective empathy deployed like a tool. The only pain that registered in that courtroom was her own. Her children's suffering didn't just fail to move her, it annoyed her. That tells you more than Corey about Corey Richens and any verdict ever will. As I always say about narcissists, the narcissism always wins. Not the narcissist. They fail. They go down in history as the monsters that they are, and she was on full display in that courtroom of the monster that she is. The narcissism also on full display because it's completely enveloped her. This was the sentencing. It was the sentencing hearing for Corey Richens' case. May 13th, what would have been Eric Richens' 44th birthday. Judge Richard Marzik had two options on the table, 25 years to life or life without parole. 5 hours of testimony, victim impact statements from Eric's family, both his sisters, his brother-in-law, statements from all three boys read by their counselors, and then the defense's turn. Letters from Corey's mother, her brothers, her sister, jail volunteers, church pastors, investors from her real estate business, and three strangers brought to argue against life without parole on philosophical grounds. And then Corey herself, 40 minutes standing at a podium in a lime green jail uniform and handcuffs, reading from a prepared statement addressed to her sons. We're going to break that statement apart because I believe that allocation is one of the most psychologically revealing things that can happen in a case like this. And in a case that includes a children's grief book written by a woman convicted of creating the grief, it says something. But first, the boys, because you can't understand what Corey did at that podium unless you understand what she was responding to. Her sons did not hold back. One of them described Corey putting them in the basement after their father died while she went to see a neighbor. He described fear, confusion, helplessness. He said that when people mention Corey's name, he feels hateful and ashamed. He says if he got out, he'd be terrified she'd come take him away from the family caring for him now. He's nine. Another one of the boys, 11 years old, looked at the situation and described becoming a parent to his younger brother because Corey wasn't doing the job, walking him to the bus, feeding him, watching him. He described Corey locking his brother in his room and him sneaking food through the door. He described a kitten left outside that was eaten by raccoons because Corey wouldn't let him bring it in. Chickens and rabbits that froze or starved because nobody was allowed to care for them. He told the court Corey showed them videos of starving children in war zones and they refused to eat undercooked food, and he said his mother never once said sorry for any of it. It's a little kid. He's not even the oldest. The oldest, 13 now, 9 when his father died, said he thinks Corey should get a life sentence because what she did was very sick. He said his dad was kind and thoughtful and always went the extra mile. He described waking up shaking the night Eric died, having a seizure, and later learning that Corey had purchased additional fentanyl and had it in the house. He said he was locked in his room so often he couldn't remember if the lock was on the inside or the outside. He said he felt like he had to take care of his siblings. And then he said, I miss my dad, but I do not miss my life, how my life used to be. I don't miss Corey. I will tell you that. Those are his words, 13-year-old. These aren't coach statements from adults whispering in kids' ears. These are specific, granular, lived-in memories. A dead kitten, the undercooked lasagna, the locked bedroom door, the videos of starving children used as punishment. No adult plants those details. Those are the things a child remembers because they happened to them. And they've seemingly amazingly processed a lot of this for their very young age. You know, a lot of people are like, I couldn't do that. Well, thank your lucky stars. You were never put in that position. People are capable, children are capable of processing a lot of shit at young ages when most would go, they'll never understand. And I think that's the sin, if you will, of so many parents. Of, oh, the kids, they're resilient. They'll remember that. Yeah, they're resilient. They'll get through it. They'll remember it as much as you're like, oh, they'll forget it. No, they won't. It will make an impact. It will guide future decisions and issues and anxieties and everything else that comes along with that type of treatment from the person that you supposedly love. I know because I've seen it firsthand. In my world, with my own child and one of their parents. Obviously, it's not me. The shit that you have to try and process to understand things and what they are able to come to doesn't need and doesn't require the other parent going, here's a laundry list of all the horrible things they've done. They remember, they talk, they just kind of come to their own conclusions, and it's strikingly accurate, usually. I was very taken aback watching this and hearing these kids' reactions, running it through my own experiences with my own child and the situations that we've gone through. With mental illness and a parent, I don't wish it on my worst enemy. I don't wish it on my worst enemy to have to have to be involved in that. If you got two healthy parents, thank your freaking lucky stars. Because being in any circle like this is horrifying. It's horrifying. I related a lot to this case. I lived, obviously I'm here, but it got bad. I don't think I was very far from being this, honest to God. Not that there was necessarily, poisoning involved, but there was other things, and it really makes you aware of human beings around you. And it certainly questions your trust, and it certainly makes young people question their trust of others as well, without going into any sort of super great detail. But people are capable of absolutely horrendous, horrible, mind-bending things. Corey Richin certainly was one of them. And when they get called out, they don't take accountability. Of course. No. No. In a case like this, they stand up in court for 40 minutes, address your kids, and dismiss everything they've just said to you. Demand respect. To say you're not going to take those things you're saying. You're not going to accept that. Because you're their mother. But you'll be there for them. You'll be the martyr. You'll take the pain, and you'll exist when they finally come around to seeing the light. Yeah. What a bright light you are, bitch. She stood up for 40 minutes, addressed her sons, and I need you to understand the structure of what she did, because the structure tells it all. She opened by blaming Katie and Clint Benson, Eric's sister and brother-in-law, who now have custody of the boys, for cutting off their communication. She spent several minutes detailing how she's been prevented from calling, how her letters are returned, how her birthday cards never arrive. She told the boys, she warned social services this would happen. Hey, bitch, just because you predict it's going to happen because people are going to prevent you from getting in contact with your kids because you're a clear and present danger to them, doesn't mean that your prediction means jack. You know it's going to happen because you're an awful human being. It's not because people are trying to prevent you from communicating with your children. They're preventing you from communicating with your children because they don't want them further traumatized by you. It's not a let's pick on Corey thing, you stupid bitch. She told them the dark side of the family, the dark side of the family. Fought for custody, but was denied. But she acknowledged even once why she is separated from her children. Yeah. Before she reckoned for even a sentence with the fact that the jury unanimously found she killed their father, she made herself the wronged party, and the people caring for her sons were the villains. That was her opening move. Not, I'm sorry you're going through this. Not, I understand why you're angry. The opening move was, they did this to us. I will say this. She did say, I know you're angry. Not, I understand why you're angry. Not registering it. But you are. And that's an inconvenience to her. Then the refrain, where she tried to be somewhat ironic. And I don't know what the fuck she was really trying to do, but it didn't land well. Be like your dad. She said it again and again through the statement. Be generous like your dad. Love the mountains like your dad. Laugh loud like your dad. Build a family like your dad. And then marry a psychotic C-U-N-T like me. And don't get killed. Honest to God, that's going to be a bit of a battle, I think, for these kids, not to fall for someone like their mom. Because it's ingrained at such an early age. But, they're young. They're moldable. And I hope to God, with enough therapy and guidance and good people around them, that does not become an issue. Be like your dad. And I know how that sounds in isolation. If you're just like scanning ahead to the video and you're hearing that, oh, isn't that nice? It sounds like love. It sounds like a mother honoring the man she lost. But Corey Richins didn't lose Eric. She took Eric. She was convicted of attempting it once on Valentine's Day with a laced sandwich, failing, spending 17 days recalibrating, and finishing the job with a cocktail containing approximately 5 times a lethal dose of fentanyl. She was convicted of doing this for money, for insurance payouts, for his estate, for a financial escape hatch from millions of debt that she created. So when she stands at a podium and tells these boys to be like your dad, she's not grieving. She's constructing a defense. The implied argument is devastating in its audacity. How could I have killed a man? I'm telling my sons to emulate. That line is not for three children. That is for appeal. It's for cameras. It's for everybody out there who's an idiot who believes her shit. It's for the inevitable documentary. It is reputation management dressed up as a mother's love. I want to say this, too, about Corey. If you think she's innocent, congratulations. You've never dealt with anybody like this in your life. And if you have, you've probably been taken advantage of quite heavily. Or you've never been on the receiving end of this type of behavior. If you have or had and understood it and looked it up and studied it and learned how to not become victims of people like this over and over again, then you know what the hell she is. She's not. She is a wolf in sheep's clothing, but the wolf costume came from a closed down Halloween Express store. I mean, really, because it's like you're like, oh, where did you get that? Like, is that supposed to be a wolf? Okay. Yeah, it's just it's not done well. It's not Fredericks of Hollywood's, although that's kind of a lingerie. I'm trying to think of like a Hollywood. It's not Central Casting. It's not Central Casting costume quality. It's not. This is Halloween Express all the way. It's obvious to those who know what to look for. If you've never seen a wolf before and somebody's in a Halloween Express wolf costume, you're like, what is that over there? If you've seen a wolf, you're like, that's a real shitty looking wolf. Like, what's up? What's going on over there? This is the same woman who, after Eric died, wrote a children's book called Are You With Me? About a boy grieving his father's death. She dedicated it to Eric. She went to the local ABC affiliate to promote it. She positioned herself as the compassionate widow helping children process loss. While prosecutors alleged she was the one who actually caused it. The grief book, the Be Like Your Dad refrain at the sentencing, it's the same move. Perform devotion so publicly and so loudly that nobody thinks to ask the obvious questions underneath. Except they are, and we are, and we will, and it's happening, and you're going to be locked away forever. Then came the part that, in my opinion, crosses from manipulation to something a lot darker. She told her boys, the same boys who had just told the court that they were scared of her, that they were locked in rooms, that they watched animals die, that they don't feel safe. She told them that they've been influenced into believing their father was taken from them. She called it completely wrong and an absolute lie. She said, it's as absurd today as it was 4 years ago. She didn't address the locked room. She didn't address the dead animals. She didn't address the starvation fear. She didn't address a single specific thing her children said. She dismissed the entire reality these boys described as fabrication. She told traumatized children, her own traumatized children, that their memories are wrong, and that the people who finally made them feel safe are the ones lying to them. Exhale. Narcissistic much? It is 1,000% narcissistic behavior. I'm not diagnosing her. Can't do that. But I can guarantee with a certain degree of certainty, in my opinion, this bitch checks the boxes. People like this, they have a little bit of a pattern. It kind of goes like this. That didn't happen. And if it did, it wasn't that bad. If it was, that's not a big deal. And if it is, that's not my fault. And if it was, I didn't mean it. And if I did, you deserve it. Corey's allocation hit at least four of those in 40 minutes. Some of them in 40 seconds. It didn't happen. She maintains complete innocence. If it did, it's not her fault. The system is corrupt. The investigation was flawed. If it was bad, well, then the boys have been influenced into thinking so. And underneath everything, the steady implication, I'm the real one suffering here. Then she told the boys to ignore the noise. She told them to question what they've been told. She told them to listen to your little hearts and remember who we are. She told them to be suspicious of people who judge them and trust only those who've proven their loyalty. In a vacuum, that's a mother's encouragement aimed at children in therapy who are finally processing their trauma in a stable environment. It is an instruction to reject the healing and cling to the version of reality she is selling from a jail cell. And she couldn't resist one more move. She folded her affair into a narrative of shared fault. "I fell in love with someone who wasn't your dad," she told the boys. "Your dad fell in love with someone who wasn't me." Equal blame. Mutual imperfection. She took the motive prosecutors proved at trial, the documented relationship, the text messages, fantasizing about leaving Eric and keeping the money, and repackaged it as something that happened to both of them. Two flawed people in a complicated marriage. Not a woman who, according to the evidence presented to a jury and the world, was building an exit strategy that required her husband's death. I know. And then she threatened to stalk them. "I will call you even if you block my numbers. I will." It's like, what? You're talking about stalking your children once you get released? You're not getting released. Oh, but she'll find her way out. Oh. Now, the message she sent after the verdict, prosecutors included it in their sentencing memo, and it deserves to be read in full for what it reveals. She texted an unidentified admirer from jail. Quote, "I will expose this county, the prosecution, the judge, the Richens, the investigation, all of it, so they can lock me away for now. That's fine. It's going to come back on them. They picked the wrong one. They think sentencing is the end, closure. It's just the beginning. They haven't seen anything yet." She ended it with a winking emoji. A woman convicted of murdering her husband, the father of her three children, who is now being in court, begging in court to keep them safe from her, sent a message promising vengeance and punctuated with a winky face to an anonymous admirer. It's not someone grappling with consequences. That is someone who still believes the rules don't apply to her. The jury was wrong. The judge is corrupt. The investigation was a setup. Everybody else is the problem. The narcissistic framework cannot accommodate the possibility that she is responsible for any of this. So everyone involved must be lying, corrupt, or conspiring against her. Judge Marzik saw through it. His sentencing was measured, almost understated, which made it hit harder. He acknowledged the genuine tension in the decision that life without parole might someday feel wrong to the boys if they ever want a relationship with their mother, and that 25 to life might leave them spending decades afraid that she will get out. He didn't pretend the decision was simple, and then he described the facts of the conviction, the attempt, the 7-day gap, the completion, the motive, poison, money. And he said a person convicted of that sequence is simply too dangerous to ever be free. And the fact that she just stood up and said she's going to stalk them. He ordered every count consecutive, life without parole on the aggravated murder, 5 to life on the attempted murder, 1 to 15 on each insurance fraud count, up to 5 on the forgery. The defense asked for concurrent sentences. The judge said, no way. Outside the courthouse, Eric's sister Amy spoke to reporters. She was composed. She didn't celebrate. She said something that stayed with, I think, a lot of us. "I don't think she had any remorse. She lives in her own little world." And she does. That world, her own little world. Because what we watched in that courtroom wasn't a sentencing hearing. It was a collision between two realities. One reality is the one those three boys described, a house where the locks were on the wrong side of the door, where the animals died in cages, where a mother was drunk or gone or dangerous, and where the man who held everything together was taken from them. The one reality is the one Corey has been constructing since the night Eric died. Or the other reality is the one Corey has been constructing since the night Eric died. One where she's a devoted mother, a grieving widow, a best-selling author of a children's book about loss, a woman railroaded by a corrupt system, of martyr whose insurance will eventually, or innocence will eventually shine through, since the insurance money did it. Those two realities can't coexist. The jury chose one. The judge chose one. And those boys chose one. In their own words, on their own paper, in their own handwriting, they chose one too. Corey's allocation was 40 minutes long. She used it to tell her children to ignore what they know, to distrust the people keeping them safe, and to wait for her to come back and fix everything. She told them she didn't do this. She told them she never would. She told them to be like the man she was convicted of killing. And when they said they were afraid of her, she said she'll find them. And then she was let out in handcuffs to begin the rest of her life in a cell. One of her boys had already said everything that needed to be said. He's 13. He told the court he misses his dad. He told the court he does not miss Corey. He said he started to feel really good when he moved into a safe place because the people around me were safe. This kid isn't confused. He isn't brainwashed. He's a boy who finally lives somewhere. The locks are on the right side of the door, and no performance for a podium, no matter how long, no matter how rehearsed, no matter how many times you say, be like your dad, will make him forget what it was like when they weren't. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. Again, this here has been WTF was that, the sentencing of Corey Richens. We have more to come. We're going to actually go through the boys' statements and Corey's statements. That's coming up here on the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe. We're going to watch them in entirety with reactions. We'll probably pause a little bit through there. But we're going to get a chance to share in that magic together. So join me, shall you? Little nod out to Adam, the Woo, RIP. And we'll continue that here on the channel. So press subscribe. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Links are in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.